Those Pan Am games, of course, you know, they're not at the level of an Olympic Games. It was much smaller, but security was, you know, it was certainly part of the plan, and we had assets, but nothing like you had to have in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So, but it gave me the, you know, that understanding of the different roles and the interrelationships between public safety, military security, and the games. The next one that I would call up would be 2002. There was a G8 conference in Kananaskis outside of Calgary. And in fact, that was originally taken by the RCMP as the model for the security apparatus for the 2010 games. I mean, it was a total failure. I mean, the original planners said, oh yeah, the Olympics, it's just like Kananaskis on steroids. We know how to do that, just make it bigger, you know. And he's the one that famously came up with the original estimate for security of $175 million and lost his job over it and like that. Because the G8, I mean, it's an interesting learning thing, because in fact, the guy who was the chief of staff before Paul Krober, when the operation started, he was bumped up to be the deputy commander, and Paul Krober went in as the chief of staff. He was the chief of staff for Kananaskis. And before that, he was my chief of staff in Edmonton. Very experienced, brilliant officer. So he had that behind him. But a G8, it's about protecting 8 people and keeping the rest of the world out. The Olympics were responsible to protect 8 or 10,000 and invite the rest of the world in. Mm. It's a completely different problem. So it was a useful experience sometimes in the other side of the coin, or in what not to do, or in I guess in highlighting the differences. And it helped us to say, for instance, to say to our planners or troops that eventually came, said, remember the G8 in Kananaskis? They go, yeah, yeah. It's nothing like that. Oh, okay. This whole clean break, different situation, it was important to get that message across. I mean, the last big Olympics in Canada, of course, Summer Olympics in 76?
Yes.
Yeah, the one after New York.
In Calgary.
Montreal.
Oh, Montreal, I'm sorry.
And I think that is still the largest Canadian forces operation in Canada.
The Montreal Olympics. Oh, okay.
And, you know, just 4 years after Munich, and I think people were perhaps more tolerant of military and police presence at that time. I think the general public could see more directly the need, or were willing to accept it. It was very pervasive. And massive.
Mm.
And that just wasn't given to us this time around. But we had I think, in fact, Paul Krober asked him about, I think he was part of the 76.
He was, yes. He was. I Googled him.
And I was in Germany at that time, but little known fact, we were training in Germany to come back if they needed help.
Oh, okay.
For the Olympics. And I mean, it would have been an incredible dishonor to Canada to have to pull troops out of the frontline position, you know, to go and deal with a domestic problem. And thank goodness, in the end, it wasn't required.
Mm.
But just that we were doing that training, I was a young captain at that time. It was quite concerned about that. Mm. And to talk to my soldiers about the potential of shooting Canadians.
Yeah.
You don't want to go there.
No.
That's why that we really got out of that business, the whole crowd confrontation business. We got out of that after that. We said, this is done. This is not what soldiers should be doing. And in the intervening period, police have gotten much better at it. And we've been able to distance ourselves.
So future Canadian Forces domestic security isn't going to be about civilians in the same extent that Vancouver 2010 was.
Oh, no. But I think we'll always put the police to be in first contact with civilians. They're trained specifically for
mm-hmm.
that. They know them. You know. There's this image in a democracy, and this is an apocryphal image. But here's the mob. There's the police. There's the military. And there's Parliament. So, should there be such a murderous mob, you know, as in 1789 in Paris,
mm-hmm.
that the police are exhausted or overwhelmed, and there's only the military between the mob and Parliament? And it's the apocalyptic scenario, but the military will not fail. Nobody wants to go there. And there's no indication of that happening in Canada in our time.
So I know that there was an incident during the games with protesters kind of throwing things in through storefront windows. Was that mainly handled by the police, or was there military intervention in that as well?
There was no military involvement, but I want to just keep that incident in mind. Almost the identical thing occurred a few months later in Toronto during the G20.
Mm-hmm.
The police responded very differently, and the crowd responded very differently, and the consequences have been enormous in both cases. So the people who were causing the problems, they weren't protesters. Their group called themselves the Black Bloc, so you can look it up on the web. They have websites, of course, who doesn't? Probably Facebook, window-breaking Facebook. When I first heard about them, I said, anarchists. And the anarchists said, wait a minute, don't confuse us. We're anarchists, but we have an ideology. Those people have no ideology. To them, breaking plate glass windows and burning police cars, it's an extreme sport. They do it for badness. There's no way. Okay. Their tactic is to mix with the crowd. And then on a prearranged signal, maybe a whistle blast or something like that, they will converge, break a window, and then disappear back into the crowd. Torture police car, disappear back in the crowd. Very hard to deal with. But when they did it in Vancouver, the police behaved very well and with restraint. And the crowd went over to the side of the police and push the Black Bloc away from them, said, don't come and hide amongst us. We don't want what you're doing.
Mm.
Okay. The same initial incident in Toronto, and I've seen the videos, they're just heartbreaking. The police acted, in my humble opinion, quite unreasonably, and the crowd sided with the Black Bloc. Because the police were beating on the crowd, not on the Black Bloc. Or not only on the Black Bloc. Completely different outcome. And you're right, it occurred, was it opening day or the day before, or it was right up front.
Right at the beginning.
And after that, the police and the crowd, they were just like this. And I talked to a policeman who, you know, as the gold medals started mounting up, and then that hockey game, and I hate to think, if they hadn't won the gold medal at that hockey game, what could have happened? But, you know, it all worked out. And talking not with the individual policeman, but their senior officer, superior officer, on Robson Street, it was wall-to-wall people. You could not move. I mean, it was like this. And if something had happened, the police would have been so impeded from doing any kind of response just from the mass of people, nothing happened. They were happy. So a potential nightmare scenario. And the police, they could feel that it wasn't a problem. Toronto, just understand there's 5 or 7 inquiries still going on. We haven't heard the end of it. It's very ugly.
Would you attribute the difference to the kind of environment of the Olympic Games, peace and harmony and sportsmanship?
I'm sure that's part of it. Okay, I think that's a fair comment. I think there was the start point's really different. But nobody knew how it was going to turn out at that moment. In our case.
Mm-hmm.
And one went well, one went badly. Luck of the draw, poor training. One explanation I heard was that the police beating on the crowd were not Toronto Police Service. They were imports.
Okay.
That didn't know the area well, didn't know the people. I mean, this will all come out eventually. I mean, there's no question Toronto Police Service was still responsible whether they did the head bashing themselves or not. Anyway, they made us look good.
All right, well, do you have anything yourself that you would like to tell that we may have potentially missed, or...
No, I mean, there are lots more stories, but the time and the scope of your project preclude them. To say it was a fascinating, very complex experience, a lot of lessons came out of it. I mean, it all sounds very trite, but yeah, it was all of that and more. And, yeah, I was glad to be there.
Good. That's great. Let me find... So this concludes the military oral history program with Major General Ed Fitch on March 22nd, 2011. And we have the release form with us. I have signed it. And Mr. Fitch, have you signed the form? And do you agree to the circumstances in which you're signing?
I've read and understood. I've signed it, and also, as we spoke at the outset, I'll be looking forward to. I'm going to take a copy of this from
course.
My photocopier,
mm-hmm.
and I'll look for a copy of whatever product you produce. Did I mention that for the
yes.
Jewish Historical Society for their archives?
Of course. Well, thank you very much, and I will get it to you as soon as I can.
Okay.